We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here with you on this edition of the show. It's good to be with you today, as it is each day. Rick Green and I enjoy hosting the show and bringing you the news of the day from a biblical and constitutional perspective, and that's what we're going to do on this edition of the program as well. Just a reminder for those who haven't done this, but maybe you would like to, you can subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, whether on Apple devices, Android devices, whether you have the Spotify app, wherever you listen to podcasts, you can subscribe to the program. Just type in the name of the show, At the Core, and you can click the subscribe button. And you may be asking, well, what's the benefit to me? Well, the benefit is that the program gets queued up in your podcast library each and every day, and you can listen to all episodes of the program there in your library, and you can catch interviews that you might have missed for various reasons. Maybe you're in and out of the vehicle or in and out of the home and unable to listen to the entire program, which is how radio works, and the podcast helps alleviate that problem. So subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. We're in Proverbs, as we've been for the last few months, Proverbs chapter 9. More content on wisdom, more truth on wisdom. And looking at verse 7 and 8, it says, "He who corrects a scoffer gets dishonor for himself, and he who reproves a wicked man gets insults for himself. Do not reprove a scoffer, or he will hate you. Reprove a wise man, and he will love you." And have you ever had an experience where you correct someone and it doesn't go well? They do not receive correction? Well, that's what this is talking about here. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 7 and 8. "He who corrects a scoffer gets dishonor for himself. He who reproves a wicked man gets insults for himself." So it's not saying that you shouldn't correct a scoffer or you shouldn't reprove a wicked man, but what it is saying is that it might not go well. It might not go well, and your reproof might not be received. Now, when God's in the picture and the Holy Spirit is at work, you get conviction, and wicked people can turn from their ways, but it takes an act of God. And oftentimes, we as humans think that we can change people, we can change their behavior, we can change their patterns, we can change their heart. But in reality, what you'll soon realize when you're dealing with sin is it takes God to change the heart. And that's what this proverb is alluding to. And then lastly, when you reprove a wise man, he will love you. So that's how you can differentiate, or at least try to determine whether your reproof is being heeded or not, and that is how the other person responds. That's Proverbs chapter 9, verses 7 and 8. Well, a couple of events that I want to keep highlighting, at least this one we'll be pushing until, well, next week, and then registration closes. But this is our Activate Summit, and we're just about a month out, about 5 weeks out from our Activate Summit. It's going to be here in Tupelo, Mississippi, and we would love for you to join us. But registration closes on Monday, all right? Registration closes on Monday. So if you would like to register, now is the time to do it. And registration closes actually on Sunday, May 11th. Registration closes on Sunday. So you've got about 2 days left to register for our Activate Summit. We're going to have a great time in Tupelo, Mississippi at the Cadence Bank Conference Center. And there's a whole lineup of speakers. I'll just mention a few of them. The event, by the way, the dates are June 12th through the 14th. And looking at the speaker lineup, some of your favorite AFR hosts, Abraham Hamilton III, Todd Herman, Frank Turek, Dr. Alex McFarland, and Ed Vitagliano. Those are our main session speakers. We'll have some breakout speakers as well, some panel discussion, and an Activate Kids track as well. That's 6 to 12 for the Activate Kids session. Everything in the main session is going to be age appropriate for 13 and up. All right. So 13 and up, they're going to be in the main session as well with the adults. And then 5 and under registration is free. Registration is free for 5 and under. So that's our Activate Summit coming up in June the 12th through the 14th. You can go ahead and register today, but don't wait any longer. Why? Because registration closes on May 11th. In just a couple of days, registration will close on that. And we've been touting it. We've been teasing it. We've been giving discount codes. And it seems like registration's been open for a while on that, and it has. But before you know it, you're going to turn around on Monday, and the door is going to be closed on that registration. So if you want to join us, please go over to activate.afa.net, and we'll plan to see you at our Activate Summit. Another thing I want to mention is our tours that we do each year, our spiritual heritage tours that my dad started. Actually, my grandfather started them. My dad continues them. And then my brother Wesley and I are trying to pick up the tradition. And so that's what we're doing both this fall and as we head into early 2026. And I'll just name a couple of these tours that we're going on. We'll be going to D.C. in Williamsburg, Washington, D.C. in Williamsburg, Jamestown, Yorktown in September. We'll be going to Boston in October, the next month, and we'll be going to Boston the 12th through the 17th of October. That's our first trip to Boston. We'll be touring America's spiritual heritage, Christian heritage in Boston with Stephen McDowell and Tim Barton. Stephen's with the Providence Foundation. Tim Barton's with Wall Builder, son of David Barton. And then in early 2026, in March, we'll be going back-to-back to Israel, the land of the Bible, and then Greece with the Footsteps of Paul trip. That's in March of 2026. Two separate trips to Greece and Israel, but you can do those back-to-back with us if you would like to. So you can go over to wildmangroup.com to check out more information, wildmangroup.com to check out more information on the tours that we take each year. This is a story I've got to highlight. I've had it kind of in the can for a couple of days. But with all of the money that goes through Washington, D.C., the trillions of dollars that our government spends each year, you had to know, or you had to at least assume that there was some illegality involved, some embezzlement, some fraud, some abuse of spending. And that's the case. It's actually been confirmed. We've been kind of waiting on these indictments. But this is a breaking headline as of this week. Former Biden State Department budget analyst has pled guilty to embezzling more than $650,000 from the agency over a two-year span, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington, D.C. And I'll guarantee you there's more of this that'll probably come out. I don't know how much more. But when you have these bureaucrats with access to this much money, I mean, what do you expect is going to happen here? All right. And this is on the kind of on the heels of finding out that our very own Treasury Department, the very agency, the very executive department that issues all this money, right? Trillions of dollars through government congressional appropriations, the Treasury Department, they're responsible for printing and wiring all of this money. And we found out through DOGE and through the Treasury Secretary that the Treasury Department system wasn't properly coding payments, and that upwards of 50 to 60% of payments that went through the Treasury system were not properly coded. All right. Now, in layperson speak, what does that mean? It means that there's supposed to be this code where you can track payments back to congressional budget authorization, all right, where you can look at a payment and you can look at a code and you can say, okay, this money was appropriated by Congress through this legislation, and here's, you know, the specific category in which this appropriation is supposed to be assigned. So you could easily corroborate that a wire transfer through the Treasury system is actually legally authorized through Congress. Very simple accounting procedure that every business in the world follows. Well, as it turns out, when President Trump took office, his team quickly realized that the Treasury Department wasn't applying this code. The space for this code in the system was left completely blank. So you literally have no way to attribute the money to an appropriations item. Very, very problematic. And this is why when people talk about the Defense Department hasn't passed an audit in 17 years, which is a common statement. And I don't know if it's 17 years, but they haven't passed an audit in over a decade. Well, the reason they can't pass an audit is for simple reasons like this. When you have an audit, if you have a CPA firm come in and you don't have codes attributed to your payments or your income, that's not acceptable. Everything has to be coded. Everything has to have a category. Everything has to be properly attributed to what on earth is this money going for and who authorized it, right? And so the Treasury Department was leaving that blank, and many of the career Treasury Department officials were actually furious about this, but the uppers didn't want to do anything about it until President Trump got in office. And so that's been fixed. So now all of the Treasury Department payments are being coded properly. And I'll tell you what, I read a report earlier in the week that the federal spending year over year is about 5% down. Year to date, rather, not year over year. Year to date, so September to now, September 30th, so October 1st to now, the federal spending's down about 5%. Now, I didn't dig further into this and why it's down. There may be some plausible explanations, but I think one of the things is there's just a lot of wasteful spending, unnecessary spending, some of it not even congressionally authorized, that DOGE has found, and they're just cutting off the spigot. I mean, I personally know people that have had their employment affected by these massive government grants that just aren't going out anymore. And I think overall, it's a good thing. It really is. It really is a good thing because of just how wasteful our government has been. And so that's been fixed. That's a big deal, folks. I just want to highlight how big of a deal that is, because who knows how much money was being improperly spent because it wasn't being coded properly. And we see now that the U.S. Attorney's Office is now indicting people because this person actually pled guilty because of illegality. And that's the kind of headlines that we need to see, because we knew there was problems there, but to see it corroborated with actual pleadings and court filings is actually a very encouraging sign in Washington, D.C. Well, let's hit some headlines and some clips in the last few minutes we have left here. President Joe Biden is blaming none other than sexism and racism on Kamala Harris's loss. This is clip two. Let's listen.
So why do you think the vice president lost, and were you surprised?
Oh. I wasn't surprised, not because I didn't think the vice president's most qualified person to be president. She is. She's mm-hmm. qualified to be president of the United States of America. Right. But I was surprised. I wasn't surprised because they went the route of the sexist route, the whole route. I mean, this is a woman. She's this. She's that. I've never seen quite as successful and a consistent campaign undercutting the notion that a woman couldn't lead the country and a woman of mixed race.
Yeah.
And they played that to a fairly well.
Well, there you have it. It's not because Kamala Harris is a terrible candidate, but because she's a woman. We'll be back.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us in the program. AFR.net is our website, and the American Family Radio app is available for you on your smartphone and your tablet device for you to download, and it's free. You don't even have to log in. That's the American Family Radio app. Well, the clip we ended on was quite humorous. Might have gotten your blood pressure up. And that was Joe Biden, President Biden, former president, blaming sexism on Kamala Harris's loss. And when I told you this, if you want accurate predictions, you just need to listen to the program. Because
amen.
I told the audience in the days following the 2024 election that the Democrats are unable to self-correct. And it's part of the fallen nature. And the fact that their party, now, don't get me wrong, the Republicans have their problems too.
Of course.
But within the Republican Party, a broad base of the party is evangelical Christians, which often bring the party back to sanity, right? And conservatism, by definition, is just a sane political philosophy, right? We recognize what works and we recognize what doesn't work. We know who our creator is. We follow his precepts. The Democrat Party, Bobby, has been taken over by the godless radicals. It's literally a party of paganism and godlessness. Really, they worship their own gods and idol worship. And so the party is off kilter. Its roots, the roots of the party are toxic as well, because you get into the KKK and Jim Crow and racism. But they're unable to self-correct, Bobby. And this is another example.
Yeah. In one of the polls, various and sundry different parties, libertarians, right, left, you name it, have been polled. 71-72% believe that illegal immigration needs to be taken care of.
Yeah.
We've heard several presidents, we've played clips of several presidents, secretaries of state, et cetera, that says we need to get a handle on illegal immigration. And the reason why I bring this up is those same percentages are part and parcel of just what you speak of.
Yeah.
There's various and sundry different topics that Democrats espouse, and it's not what the populace of this country is about anymore.
That's right.
And they're being heard now. That's the difference.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, this is pragmatically speaking. Now, from my perspective, this doesn't matter to me. I don't care. I actually kind of do care, but I totally don't lose sleep at night when the Democrats don't self-correct, because to me, it's like par for the course, right? If they want to keep doing dumb things, that's on them. That's on them. And as long as they're not in charge of the country, then that's on them. They're responsible for their own actions.
Yeah, and ultimately, it's a moot point.
Yeah, right, right. And so, but what you see here, folks, is whether it's Hillary Clinton, Russia, right? It wasn't because Hillary Clinton was a terrible candidate. She was having some mysterious health issues that they wouldn't tell anybody about. She was at the 9/11 memorial in 2016, passed out, had to be drug into a van. Now, I'm kind of scratching everybody's memory, but this is why we have to remember things. We can't this whole modern, non-academic, social media world that we live in, we forget what happened yesterday. We forget what happened 4 years ago. Hillary Clinton was a disastrous candidate. Now, there were some aspects. She had some advantages, don't get me wrong, because she did have broad support in the Democrat Party. She had a husband that was a former president. So politically speaking, and when you like throw it all out on a whiteboard, she had some things going in her favor. Former Secretary of State, all right? But she was just not a likable person. And the corruption in the family ran deep, and everybody knew it. And so, but all in all, Hillary Clinton was a bad candidate. Very unlikable person, unlikable personality. Even some, there's some reports that Obama didn't even like Hillary Clinton. And so, but this started with Hillary Clinton, and she blames Russia, Trump won, the election was rigged. And remember, the Democrats, they always start this election denial stuff, and then conservatives come around and we deny an election, and all of a sudden it's a scandal. We can't do that. Democrats are the party of election denial. They've been doing this for over a decade. So Hillary Clinton was the first bad candidate. I'm talking about in the last, let's say, 10 years, 15 years. And then Joe Biden comes around, and the 2020 election was an absolute disaster on every level. All right, but then you fast forward, and Biden was a terrible candidate too. How he won? Well, he won because of COVID, and they changed the rules. They changed the rules of the game at the halfway point. Then you look at the Kamala Harris candidate Kamala Harris. She was a disaster. Vice President Harris was a disaster on every level. But you've got this common theme of the Democrat Party not coming to the realization that they have terrible ideas, and the American people just broadly reject their ideals. And the only way Biden was able to win is because they changed the rules in the middle of the game. That's a fact. They did. Now, much of it was built on illegality, the change in the election deadlines, creating these mail-in ballot procedures that weren't authorized by state legislatures. I mean, don't get me wrong, there was a ton of illegality tied up in how the 2020 election went down, but they rigged it. They basically rigged it, and that's the only way Biden won. They also tried to blame COVID on Trump, and the people were still kind of weary from the recovery of COVID, and there was just a lot of factors there. And by the way, China released that from a lab. Do we know if it was incidental or purposeful? Well, I don't know that, but I think that China had a vested interest in ensuring Trump didn't get reelected in 2020. That's a fact. And they've been doing research over there for how long? And all of a sudden, you know, 9 months before the election, 12 months before the election, whatever, it gets released from the lab, whether purposeful or accidental. So I think there's a lot of questions there that need to be answered on whether China intentionally released that virus or not to down Trump in the election. That's very possible, by the way, that happened. But nonetheless, Democrats still not coming to grips with the fact that they choose often very bad candidates. And now, after they've chosen bad candidates for multiple cycles, now they're talking about giving the party over to AOC.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up, yeah.
And so it's like, guys, if we were like in a meeting room having like a team meeting, which you'll never find me at the Democrat Party meetings, this is when people say, hey, guys, we're choosing bad candidates. And it's not that they're not liberal enough. It's that they're not conservative enough. They're not even centrist. And James Carville is like a shadow of the Democrat Party. He's in the history books. Nobody wants to listen to him, although he's actually got a little bit of wisdom from a political standpoint. And but this is the Democrat Party. They're unable to self-correct. And I don't know what it will take for them to turn the page on their disastrous party strategy. But I'm enjoying the inferno while it lasts. Speaking of infernos, the Gaza Pier scandal, this is what it's going to be called in the history books, and maybe they'll come up with some other fancy name for the scandal. But during the Israel-Hamas conflict in the early months and first year of the conflict, getting food into Gaza was claimed to be a problem, right? Israel was apparently not allowing food in, et cetera, through the checkpoints. And so there was somewhat of a humanitarian issue in Gaza, once again, completely caused by Hamas because they're the ruling party there. And so Biden's team and his Defense Department had this novel idea that we should set up a floating pier, spend millions of dollars on this floating pier.
$320 to be exact.
$320 million in the Mediterranean on the shores of Gaza to drive 18-wheeler trucks, basically big rigs, off of the pier, well, off of a boat, a major cargo ship, onto the pier and then onto the seashores of Gaza to deliver food. I mean, this was so a 1960s approach to military strategy. But let's listen to this Fox report on the scandal and on the disastrous numbers.
In the meantime, Danny's got this. It faced well-known problems from the very start, but now a scathing watchdog report shedding new light on former President Biden's floating Gaza pier. Washington Post headline says this: Biden's Gaza pier was more dangerous and costly than previously known. I'll say. Dan Hoffman with me now, former CIA chief of stations. And Dan, good morning to you. Couple bullet points on this absolute failure. 62 U.S. personnel injured. One U.S. service member died. $230 million to build and maintain. $31 million in damage to military equipment. 1,000 U.S. forces to execute. 20 days in use. Only 20 days in use. I mean, what else?
All right, so this is... and
actually, it was 12 days, not 20.
Yeah, probably 20, including transport.
In transit, yeah.
Yeah, okay. But as far as actual use,
right.
That's a good point. The point that I want to draw out here is, number one, blaming this on Biden. I'm not going to ride in that rodeo, because Biden didn't even know where he was. All right. Biden had some serious cognitive issues. There's no way Biden concocted this peer approach. This came from the DOD. All right. Somebody at the Pentagon went over to the White House. Now, did Biden give final approval? Of course, as commander in chief. Somebody at the Pentagon, which, heck, Seth needs to figure this out. Some bozo at the Pentagon told them this was a good idea. And this is baffling. When you look at the idiocy here, this makes no sense. We're in 2025, and when this happened, 2024, and we're deploying floating piers in the Mediterranean to deliver food, all right? This is not a long-term 10-year war zone where you're going to be bringing in heavy equipment every day, all right? That makes sense. And in that case, you just build a permanent pier. But a floating pier strategy to deliver food. This wasn't to deliver tanks. This wasn't to deliver heavy equipment. This was to deliver literally pallets of food. And you've got to have a floating pier? I mean, have they never heard of airdrops?
Exactly.
I mean, this is just baffling to me. Not to mention, Bobby, from a strategic standpoint, you can't the having to deliver the food through the ocean, through the water, is not necessary, because either way, Israel was controlling the perimeter. So you can't say, well, we couldn't get through the Egyptian border.
Right.
Well, we couldn't get through from the Israeli checkpoint, so we just had to come in through the Mediterranean. That's not true, because the Biden administration worked with the Israelis to get approval for this.
That's right.
And the IDF was providing security on the perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't say, well, the only way to get it in was through the piers. What about airdrops?
That's right. Or they could have done unimproved landings. C-17s can do that. They're able to utilize unimproved airstrips.
Yeah.
You could have done that just north of the strip.
Yeah.
And then truck the foods and the various products into the strip.
Yeah, you could do helicopter.
Any kind of
major helicopter drops.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
and this is like World War II strategy here.
I know. Yeah, the floating pier is like, it's so antiquated. And I get the floating pier from a military strategic standpoint could be very helpful in certain scenarios.
Emergency.
Maybe South China Sea. For a more permanent setup, but for food pallets, that's the baffling thing, is that they thought this was a good idea for food pallets. But folks, this is the government. I mean, this is the government under Biden. I mean, it's one thing for some low level Pentagon staffer to recommend this, and then everybody else says, no, Joe, bad idea, and here's 10 reasons why. But the fact this got up to the top, I mean, you obviously had generals and the defense secretary and the White House on board with this. I mean, how antiquated, a floating pier for food pallets in 2025. No better way to deliver food.
And yet these same officials who are no longer in power and the same generals who are no longer in power want Pete Hegseth impeached.
Right. For what?
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
For nothing. Yeah, they just want Hegseth gone because he's bringing reform.
Exactly.
There's also, Bobby, and not all of this is on the record, but there's some serious infighting at the Pentagon and in Congress, because there's some war hawks, which I don't really like that term because it gives a kind of a favorable connotation to people who just want war, war, war.
Right.
But there's a fragment, there's a section of the Trump administration, a population that doesn't want these never-ending wars. And but there's some in Congress and maybe some at the Pentagon that they want to bomb Iran, they want to bomb this, they want to get in Ukraine. They just want to keep the wars going.
Pumps up the military-industrial complex, stock prices increase,
yeah,
insider trading. Those lists
the
are
whole
coming
nine
out
yards.
As well.
Yeah.
They profit handsomely.
Yeah. And so that's going to be something interesting to follow, is how this pans out. But I think a lot of the opposition to Hegseth just stems from these warmongers that all they want to do is go to war. And Hegseth has a very focused ideology on avoiding war through strength, through projecting strength, through diplomacy. President Trump's made
Sounds
it clear.
Sounds like Reagan, doesn't it?
Yeah. President Trump's made it clear he doesn't want more war. He wants these wars to end. And a lot of President Trump's base is very anti-war because we've just been exhausted with war after war after war. And we've spent tens of trillions of dollars on these foreign
wars. Way too many lives.
Wars. Yeah, too many lives. And so I think a lot of the concocted opposition to Hegseth is from the establishment Democrats and Republicans that love war in D.C., leaking and smearing and going after Hegseth. But President Trump needs to stand by him because Hegseth is a good man, born-again believer, on the right path, obviously military vet, has extensive experience in military, is getting the Pentagon back on track. And it's a good thing. It's a right thing. We'll be back in a few.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here with you. Chris Woodward joins us each Friday for this edition of the program, and he's with us again. Chris, welcome back.
Thank you.
Well, Chris, I want to talk trade. I know you've got some stories on the U.S.-UK trade announcement mm-hmm. as of this week, but I want to talk a little bit about the U.S.-China, because I know you've got that story as well, but what I want to do is do a little bit of a flashback.
Okay.
So in 2019, President Trump, at the time, first-term president, struck a trade deal with China, and this primarily had to do with China buying U.S. agricultural product, mm-hmm. because China can't feed itself.
Right.
They have to have our agricultural product in order to feed their massive populace. Well, that trade deal basically fell apart mm-hmm. because obviously President Trump lost re-election. The deal was about less than a year old, and China didn't follow through mm-hmm. on it. They ended up not buying what they said they were going to buy, right. which is going to be billions of dollars in agricultural product. And so I say that to lead into. President Trump is a few months in here, and he's striking deals mm-hmm. that can be enforced over the next 4 years. So this is a game changer as far as the reality of the trade deals actually being enforced and being carried out how they are supposed to be done on paper.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that, the two entities, China and the U.S., China is going, well, you need us to make your stuff. And China or the U.S. is saying, well, sure, but there are other places.
You need
places
us to buy your
right,
stuff.
Right, you need us to buy your stuff. And that's why you see countries like Vietnam going, hey, we'll make that stuff for you over here.
Yeah.
And that's just one example. And so the U.S. has a lot of leverage here in this particular situation. Yes, they do make a lot of stuff in the U.S., right or wrong, like it or not.
Yeah.
But we are a nation that is programmed program to buy even if you don't need something.
That's right.
And so we will find somebody else in this world, perhaps even in your neck of the woods, that will make that for us, and we'll work deals with them to put pressure on you, which is all the more reason why I think the U.S. actually has the advantage here, even though you might hear in the news media how Trump is causing chaos and disrupting things.
Yeah. Well, on that note, Chris, as you and I said a couple weeks ago, we told everybody to calm down, that with the whole Liberation Day and the stock market drop and everybody's losing their cool and it's the end of the world and it's the economic apocalypse. Chris, the market is on fire.
Yes.
And the market is on fire. It set multiple records in the last 10 to 12 days. And there's no sign of it stopping. And we hadn't even got trade deals in.
Oh, yeah.
And the market's, like, hot.
Yeah, it's doing well. It closed in positive territory yesterday. The Dow finished 254 points higher. The NASDAQ was up 189 and the S&P up 32, due in part to things like that trade deal being announced between the U.S. and the U.K. And details are still coming out over that. But as we report on our website, AFN.net, President Trump agreed to cut tariffs on U.K. autos, steel, and aluminum in a planned trade deal with the U.K., which would buy more American beef and streamline its customs process for goods from the U.S. Beef is a huge thing, obviously, not just in Texas. We in Mississippi are, you can't spell Mississippi without agriculture. That's what our number one industry is here. Yeah. And even Florida has a sizable cattle industry in the panhandle.
Panhandle,
yes.
Yeah.
So there are people that are going to benefit from this. And just to give people an idea of maybe what we gave up here, Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick said the baseline 10% tariffs would stay in place, while UK officials said that Trump's auto tariffs would go from 27.5 to 10%. So, we're giving, we're taking, as is the case with the UK. And I think it's really important that we have an agreement in place with the UK. We're partners on a lot of things. We're allies. And, we need to have that in place to be able to go to other European countries going, well, England did it too.
Yeah.
So why don't you work with us on this? And all that puts all that much more pressure on countries like China to actually get this deal done.
Amen.
Yeah. And the auto tariff being dropped doesn't concern me the least bit, because we're talking about some of these fringe vehicle brands, and I'm not insulting these vehicle brands. I'm just telling you.
I'm not driving an Aston Martin.
Well, they're not. They don't make up any sizable amount of car purchase. And we're looking at Jaguar, Land Rover, and Mini.
Mm-hmm.
And those are more premium and luxury vehicles. And so we're not talking about millions of cars.
Right.
Tens of millions of cars. And so that's probably a good trade-off there.
Yeah, if you're driving a Jaguar, as the British people say, you don't care about the tariffs. Right, yeah. And you're putting premium in it, it doesn't matter how much gas might be.
Yeah, this in 2020, put it this way, in 2024, we only imported 100,000 cars from the UK. So that was a good compromise there. The beef, Chris, there's been some very unfair trade practices on not allowing our beef to be exported, other countries having these tariffs in place for a while now. It's been a major complaint of beef cattle farmers.
Yeah, it really is, and it's crazy too. I mean, you hear these stories about world hunger, and here we have just a ton of cattle that's could be used to feed people in the UK or other parts of the country, or other parts of the world, I should say.
Yeah.
And that stuff's not being used. Some people do it for environmental purposes, which again is silly.
Yeah.
Because I could spend the rest of the show talking with you about all kinds of climate predictions that never came and became part of reality. But agriculture is a huge thing, and we need a country, especially ours. You need foods from countries that are not going to attack you. That's part of your national security foreign policy measure. So the UK can trust us, knowing that our cattle is raised ethically, and it's going to be shipped to you safely. And it's not going to come from a communist country that doesn't want you to exist.
Yeah. Talk about the China negotiations, because there has been no negotiations. They've been at a standstill for the last few weeks, and the market didn't like it. But talk about what's upcoming with the U.S.-China trade negotiations.
Yes. Well, as far as who is going to Switzerland, that that group includes Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent and U.S. Trade Representative Jameson Greer. They're going to meet with their counterparts in Geneva, Switzerland, so neutral territory. We're not going to Beijing.
Yeah.
They're not going to say, well, you came here and you're not leaving without giving us, you know, some agreements. So I think this is a good sign. Number one, the fact that they're meeting and talking is a good thing. And there needs to be more media coverage on the fact that they're actually meeting because, yeah. You know, a week ago on this program, we're talking about all the doom and gloom from, you know, the scaremongers at MSNBC and CNN.
I know.
So it is going to be definitely something to watch. We're going to be here over the weekend, at least remotely, updating our web coverage of that. So do check AFN.net for details should they develop out of this deal.
You know, Chris, I want to ask people, and maybe I will sometime, did you really think that these tariffs, these astronomical tariffs, I'm talking 100%, 145% in the case of China, did you really think that they were going to stay in place forever? I mean, because they talked like they would. They talked about shortages on the shelf, your iPhone's going to cost $20,000. That's an exaggeration.
Right.
But they talked about the iPhone costing, you know, thousands of dollars more and all this doom and gloom, which when you looked at the doom and gloom they were predicting, it was like, wow, this is going to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
But my question is, with these economists and these talking heads, there's no way they really thought that China's not going to come to the table, the U.S. isn't going to come to the table. We're just going to leave 150% tariffs on everything coming from China until Jesus comes back.
Yes.
There's no way they really believe that.
No, it's part of just scaring people to, you know, maybe bring in some revenue for somebody to campaign on or whatever it may be. People still talk about Donald J. Trump as if this is the first time he's been president. It's almost as if we don't have 4 years of evidence to show that he didn't ruin the country the last time.
Or first day to negotiate.
Right.
Well, and how many in the world of negotiations, how many times does a party walk away? This happens every day,
it does.
Right? Now you put in an offer for a house, they don't accept it. You say, "All right, I'm done. I'm out of here," and nobody ever, at least you shouldn't. No rational person will say, "Well, we'll never cut a deal with them ever again."
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way these are guys and gals that have been doing this market stuff for a long time, so they've seen this rodeo before.
Right.
And so I just think it's either naive or just straight up untrue and lying. To talk doom and gloom as if these 150% tariffs are going to be in place forever, when instead you and I were sitting here saying this is purely a negotiating tactic.
It is. And by the way, it's not the first time we've had tariffs with countries. It's almost like we've never had a tariff until Trump re-entered office.
Yeah, this is all Trump's idea.
We've been tariffing stuff since the founding fathers were in office.
Yes.
Somehow, some way.
Yeah, and President Biden, I'll tell this story 100 times over because of the ease of understanding. President Biden slapped tariffs on all these mattress exporters, and the mattress prices from those countries went up. Domestic production spiked. Mm-hmm. Billions of dollars is currently and was invested in mattress manufacturing by American companies.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Ashley Furniture. And it created tens of thousands of jobs. And now the Chinese mattresses are the same prices as the U.S. mattresses. And that was tariffs put in place or kept in place by Biden that nobody complained about it. Maybe mm-hmm. some consumers complained about it, but it wasn't a scandal.
Yeah, some people that worked for Biden even went on television saying that these things would benefit workers and the American people.
Yeah,
which is what we've heard Trump say.
I'll never forget Yellen. So now, whether she's being honest or not or just covering for Biden, I don't know, but she said, yeah, these tariffs will have zero effect on consumer prices.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no effect on consumer prices. So either she was lying or she was being honest. But I think she was probably being a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I think she knows that tariffs aren't really having a huge impact on consumer prices, at least not at a scale that is apocalyptic.
Right. I mean, if this was really, granted, some people in Tupelo where we live, or really the United States, they might still be living on a credit card, and they're going out eating and shopping and all these things. You know, no one, to my knowledge, is like sitting at home because of tariffs.
Because of tariffs.
Right.
Yeah,
you're still going out and enjoying your life.
Yeah.
Hopefully, spending cash to buy things and not driving up debt on top of the debt they already acquired when Biden was in office and groceries were outrageous. But people are not freaking out, which is why, you know, consumer spending is still doing well. People are still buying houses.
Yeah.
Interest rates are not as terrible as they were. They're probably going to get better.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of economic numbers. The stock market is back. You know, yeah, you might have lost your retirement a month ago, but it's back.
It's back. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and this shows the difference in media treatment for a Republican president versus a Democrat president. Because in 2022, the bloodbath in the stock market was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
It was a disaster. In 2022, under Biden, the stock market had a very tough drop. Took a while to come back. And then there were some headlines about, hey, we're going to have a recession, and they were wrong. We never had a recession. We had a technical recession in 22 for two quarters of negative GDP, but it bounced back and did the, you know, where they was BLS, were they messing with the numbers with the labor? And yeah, probably so. But it wasn't apocalyptic.
Right.
It wasn't the end of the world. And here we are now. President Trump's policies, Chris, you get a U.S.-China trade deal in the next 4 weeks, and then you've got the permanency of the tax cuts that happens around July 4th weekend.
Cheaper gas.
Yeah, energy's down. Gas actually went below $2 in some parts of the country. And I just see a lot of upside here.
Yeah, if they could really do something about the price of diesel, which is also down, that benefits people that are not even diesel customers. Because,
that affects inflation.
Yeah, I mean, you buy stuff from a store that got there thanks to diesel. The national average for diesel yesterday was $3.53 a gallon. That was down from $4 this day last year.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's gotten cheaper. If they could somehow get diesel down to about $3 a gallon, which is... It is possible. If you could get it down to $3.25 a gallon, that impacts everybody listening because, again, if you're buying groceries or you're buying a shirt, that got to that store thanks to diesel fuel.
Yeah, we're probably—
And diesel locomotives.
Yeah, we're probably going to have to strike a deal with the OPEC countries in order to really get oil down. Or you stop the Russia-Ukraine conflict because we're at peak capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't refine more. We can pump more out of the ground. We can't refine more. We're at peak capacity, and that's a problem that we haven't been investing in proper refining capacity over the last few decades.
Mm-hmm.
But we're probably going to have to strike a deal. And this is the benefit of the Russia-Ukraine war ending economically.
Right.
Is if we can get Russia to behave, then that opens their energy market back up to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you can get OPEC on board and everybody agrees that we need cheaper energy, that could be a game changer.
It could. And if OPEC doesn't want to play ball, invite the people running Canada and Mexico over to the White House and announce the North American counterpart to OPEC and say, we'll do it.
There you go. That's an option. Yep. There's a lot of different avenues that the president can still explore to drive energy prices down even further. And one other note, in the era of artificial intelligence and these massive data centers, we are going to have to invest in our energy infrastructure. That's a major, major topic. We'll see you next time.
Because of listeners like you, Preborn helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR. Here now is your show host, Walker Wildman.
Will you take a moment and celebrate life with me? Last year, Preborn helped rescue over 67,000 babies from abortion. Hi, this is Walker Wildman, and I want to thank you for your partnership. Think about what you did. 67,000 babies are taking their first breath now because of you. Your $28 sponsored one ultrasound that was given to a woman as she was deciding about the future of her child. Once she saw her precious baby for the first time and heard their sweet heartbeat, her baby's chance at life doubled. But Preborn's mission is not only to rescue babies' lives, but also lead women to Christ. Last year, Preborn Network Clinic saw over 8,900 women receive salvation. Your help is crucial to continue their life-saving work.
Your caring tax-deductible donation saves lives, so please be generous. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, B-A-B-Y. Your love can save a life.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.